We will hear argument next in case number 24-2291, Garland against OPM. Mr. Bonk.
All right, well, thank you and good morning, Your Honors. I may please the Court, Christopher Bonk, on behalf of Petitioner Tracy Garland. Here, there's clear error of law. OPM and the Board both rejected Ms. Garland's medical evidence as not objective, and on that basis held that OPM satisfied its burden to rebut the Bruner presumption. And so a more typical case involving application of the Bruner presumption involves an agency removal action and then review by OPM. But here, OPM is on both sides of the equation. So OPM removed Ms. Garland for medical inability to perform due to a disability and then promptly rejected her subsequent application for disability retirement, stating that there's no objective records provided to show that her medical condition caused a disablement.
What the initial decision used the word objective evidence. The reconsideration decision, which was what was on appeal, I think the government makes, the board, I guess, here, makes that that argument. So even though there is a statement about the missing objective evidence, first of all, it's not in the reconsideration decision, and second, I think the submission is that's not all there is. So clearly the absence of something called objective evidence cannot, standing alone, be sufficient. I think we established that. Why is that this case?
Certainly, Your Honor, and I think it's a really important point, a couple points to note on the request for reconsideration that are directly on point with that. One is the actual listing of absence of records, what the reconsideration decision does, it doesn't go out and say the word objective, certainly, but that's not the requirement. It doesn't need to state objective evidence in order to trigger what's effectively the Vanek and Riles requirement. The listing of missing documents, the reasons, the justifications the reconsideration decision has in affirming the initial decision, it's the same reasons. It's the same rejection of records because they're not objective. On appendix page 80, states a lack of neuropsychological testing that may have been performed over the years, records pertaining to treatment, reports psychotherapy notes. Also on page 80, flagging the basis for the rejection, medical records of your office visits during periods of incapacitation, lack of provision of psychotherapy notes. All of these are in line with the same objective medical records that the initial decision is flagging as the basis for denial. And on top of that, the reconsideration affirms.
In terms of whether or not the reconsideration decision is also turning on the absence of objective evidence, the reconsideration decision starts off by saying, we've concluded the initial decision was correct. We have again concluded that the evidence you submitted doesn't meet the requirements.
Well, exactly so, Your Honor. And that was my next point here, which is it affirms that there is no modification of the basis of the initial OPM initial decision by the reconsideration decision. The initial decision is unambiguous, and that the basis for rejecting Ms. Garland's disability retirement application is the absence of objective medical evidence. The reconsideration request affirms that. There's no modification of that basis.
What was the specific kind of evidence that in Vanek and Riles we said could not support the conclusion standing alone for failing to be objective?
The exact type of objective evidence, I do not recall the specifics on that, Your Honor, from Vanek and Riles. Exactly what nature, whether it was a report or whether it was a medical test.
I guess I'm trying to understand how broad some, whatever Vanek and Riles stands for, that is. I mean, there's a very large amount of stuff that goes into mental health evaluations that might have some subjective component, might have some objective component, and tell me why you think all of the deficiencies that were asserted by, I guess, the AJ and by OPM in the combined initial and reconsideration decisions are deficiencies identified as such for failure to be objective.
So, and I hope this answers your question, Judge. And really what I think.
It's a long question. So.
Vanek and Riles, and I think I want to stress here, it's an important point, is We're not trying to alter Trevin. We're not trying to alter Vannikin Riles. We're not trying to expand the scope of either. We think that this case, Ms. Garland's case, fits very neatly within the Vannikin Riles framework. Vannikin Riles, I think what the really key distinguishing here or distinguishing point here is, and what's prohibited under Vannikin Riles, is this categorical exclusion of evidence. And it is, it's sometimes a tricky circumstance for these psychological disabilities, certainly, which is Ms. Garland's is, where there's a heavy reliance on subjective evidence. But that's why it's all the more important here that we apply Vannikin Riles within the scope that it already exists here, which is prohibiting this categorical exclusion, because there's no dispute.
But I guess I'm trying to understand what to make of this idea of a categorical conclusion. Did OPM or AJ say, what we have here from Dr. Greenberg are some very conclusory statements. We need something to back that up, the kind of thing that tends to back that up. We don't have, you know, neuropsychological testing in which there are scores. We don't have, I don't know what else there would be, but we also don't have, I don't know, therapy notes. We don't have very specific diagnoses. That feels like it's moving outside the Vannikin Riles. You cannot rely on this alone.
Certainly, Judge. And I think if there were issues where there were not articulated diagnoses, were not articulated impacts of the disability on Ms. Garland's ability to perform, certainly I think this would bring that outside the scope of Vannikin Riles. This is not that far. There, the notes from the doctor, physician, there's multiple treating physician letters part of the record, appendix 137, 153, 155. They all walk through the identified diagnosed disabilities, major depressive disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, insomnia, and they walk through, the physician walks through the impact that this has on Ms. Garland's ability or inability to perform the essential functions here. What happens with the OPM decision, initial denial, and then the reconsideration decision, is an acknowledgement that there are these subjective medical records walking through the diagnoses, walking through the impact that these diagnoses have on Ms. Garland's ability to function, and flagging that because they are not supported by objective medical evidence, because they are not themselves objective medical evidence, discarding them, finding she's not entitled to disability retirement. We think that fits neatly within Vannikin Riles. And I think also important to flag as well on that same point or related to that point is OPM's own response to appeal. Because OPM, of course, here never filed any close of record evidence or argument at the board. So Ms. Garland, of course, appealed, heard the denial to the board, and OPM never filed an ultimate closing record argument. What OPM did file is that initial agency file, that initial response to appeal, basically memorializing the case record of the appealed action at the board level, putting that in the docket. And in OPM's initial response to appeal, it acknowledges submission of those medical records by Ms. Garland's treating physician, but then notes again, reiterates that there's no current supporting objective records. That's at Appendix 190. And then even the brief note that OPM has on its pretext burden, that response to appeal at Appendix 193, OPM states, Dr. Greenberg offered no evidence of testing, psychotherapy notes, list of medications, or documentation of treatment. Again, laundry listing the absence of objective medical documentation as the basis for that denial of disability retirement.
And if we were to agree with you on this point, what's the relief that we should give?
It's an interesting question, Judge, because it is it's not common for this court to grant it. I'll concede, but we think because of the burden shifting framework in play here under Bruner, this court can, and it has before in the past, simply reverse and approve Ms. Garland for disability retirement, because under Bruner, the presumption controls. There's no dispute that the Bruner presumption applies to Ms. Garland. The issue is whether OPM rebut that presumption. And here, our position is that there was a legal error in that rebuttal determination, so there is no rebuttal, where Bruner controls Ms. Garner is entitled to disability retirement.
What case is it that we have held where the Bruner presumption was not rebutted? You said there was a case.
Oh, for that facet of relief, Judge, I believe it was Gooden in 2006.
Site?
I do not have that on me, Judge.
Good, you said? Case called Good.
Gooden, G O O D E N. That's specifically on the issue of the relief of the remand back, or excuse me, rather than a remand, a reversal and a granting of disability retirement.
Just good N.
Good N. Sorry, G-O-O-D-E-N.
Like the pitcher. Right? Dwight Gooden. Yeah.
Yes. So,
well, your case depends on us agreeing with you that the reconsideration decision went off on the ground of no objective evidence.
Certainly, Judge, and we think
the AJ likewise.
Yes, Judge, and I think particularly the AJ's point. I mean, the AJ had almost no assessment on this at all, but rather just noted.
Well, the AJ confused the initial decision with the reconsideration decision. We don't really know what the AJ thought about the reconsideration decision.
But we do know, I think, Judge, based on the AJ's decision, that the AJ understood or thought they understood OPM's assessment or decision.
Your argument is that that's a categorical rule under Riles.
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
And that you win.
Yes. And so...
What is the scope, in your view, of the review, the finality provision of, I forget what the statutory provision is, is it 8347 or something? The one that was at issue in Lindahl, right? Lindahl said, at least constitutional, certain kinds of issues can be done on review, but... the basic determination of disability cannot be reviewed.
Well, I think in Lindahl, and at least for the applicability to this case, I think the proposition that we would take from Lindahl is that error going to this heart of administrative determination, again to Vanek and Riles, that's reviewable by this court.
Right, but then how does that affect the remedy? I wonder, I guess my question would be whether that means we can say this was a legal error, but we cannot say ourselves that here is the necessary result when that legal error is corrected.
And here, Judge, I think, I don't know that necessarily the applicability directly to Lindahl on that. I don't have that before me to break that down. But again, because this is such an unusual situation, because we have the Bruner presumption in effect, and I think the case law, you know, Bruner itself is pretty clear cut on that. If the Bruner presumption is in effect, that controls disability retirement. There's entitlement to disability retirement benefits. But if this court reverses that rebuttal burden in particular here, whether or not that rebuttal burden was satisfied as part of a legal error, that reversal should have Bruner control in our position.
What if we were to say, clarify and say, no, you can't rely on the lack of objective evidence in order to satisfy the Bruner presumption, go back and try again.
Try again to Ms.
Garner. To the board to see whether the Bruner presumption was satisfied or not. In the first instance, once they understand what the correct law is, then wouldn't that be appropriate also as an alternative option?
It certainly would, Judge, and I think we've requested that in the alternative in our pleadings as well. I see my
question. Oh. If we were to rule in your favor on the rebuttal of the Bruner presumption and say that you win, does that moot the second question you've raised, which is the propriety of the AJ in rejecting your additional evidence at step one?
In effect, yes, Judge.
That would moot that argument.
My understanding is yes. Right. I see my time is concluded. If I may reserve the remainder.
Yes.
Thank you.
We would not need to reach that.
I do not believe you need to reach that that issue, Judge.
May it please the Court. This court should affirm the board's decision, affirming the reconsideration decision of the board, of the administrative judge, because there's been no legal error here. There hasn't been a categorical exclusion of evidence, like my friend says here. There's been an application of Trevon where the lack of medical evidence was pointed to by the OPM, and that rebutted the presumption, which is perfectly in line with Trevon. And the administrative judge applied, quoted, and cited Vanek and Riles in his decision. He cataloged the evidence very carefully, just like was done in Vanneken Riles. He pointed out in his decision where there were issues with certain medical evidence. And then he took issue with the evidence that purported to come from Dr. Greenberg's office. And that just resulted in a decision that was not in favor of Ms. Garland getting disability retirement. But in Vanneken Riles, the same thing happened. The facts are a little different, but the court said, but here OPM did not express any doubt as to the credentials or veracity of Dr. Nichols or Dr. Rumler, and the only medical evidence as to whether Vanneken Riles suffered from a disabling psychological disorders were their reports and documentation. Here, there's a question about the veracity and credentials of Dr. Greenberg, so that's why there's a difference. This case does fall squarely within Trevon. It's the closest case that matches this one because it employs the Bruner presumption and it applies an analysis rebutting the Bruner presumption. Vanneken Riles is relevant, certainly, but it doesn't have the same discussion of rebutting the Bruner presumption because there was no Bruner presumption in that case. The administrative judge carefully weighed all the evidence, and he pointed out that there were issues with the reliability of the records when it came to the handwriting that he noted. Also, there were records that did not appear to have any connection to Ms. Garland. There were records that were illegible. So there were issues with the evidence, and he made a rational decision about the effect of that evidence.
Were there opinions stated under Dr. Greenberg's name that were outside the set of records as to which authenticity questions had been raised?
Your Honor, if I understand your question,
there clearly were authenticity questions raised about some of the submissions that had Dr. Greenberg's name on them. Are there some records that have Dr. Greenberg's name on them as to which there are no authenticity questions raised?
Yes, there are letters from him that...
The letters leading up to the removal for, inability to do the work.
Yes, letters that are primarily focused on working conditions and, requesting that Ms. Garland have a circumstance of work where there aren't production standards. Those are letters that I haven't seen in the record anything that questions their authenticity.
And either OPM later, not as employer, but as disability retirement adjudicator in the first instance, said, we don't have enough evidence here either to overcome the presumption or to find by a preponderance of evidence the relevant disability. What were the reasons given for the, I'm just going to use the word, untainted Greenberg records being inadequate?
It doesn't say directly in the reconsideration decision, but what the reconsideration decision suggests by what it requests is that it wanted more support for the information provided. For instance, they wanted a description of symptoms, a description of medical history and treatment, narrative reports and psychotherapy notes, medical records that establish the severity of her medical conditions, her response and compliance, records of office visits during periods of incapacitation. So basically they're asking for the backup for what Dr. Greenberg is saying. And if you look at Vanneken Riles, in Vanneken Riles, those doctors did provide that sort of information. It helps that there was a hearing in that particular case, but there were witnesses. But in Vanneken Riles, there was the applicant's testimony, the husband's corroborating testimony, a physician's letters accompanied by medical reports and progress notes, and a psychiatrist's letter with a diagnosis and prognosis also accompanied by treatment notes. So there's a difference between the facts here and in Vanneken-Riles.
I have a question. On page A16, which I believe is the administrative judge's decision, it said that the Bruner presumption can be overcome by demonstrating a lack of objective medical evidence, providing a reasoned explanation, and then goes on to discuss, I guess, the wrong decision by OPM, but then talks about the reconsideration decision. But why isn't this reference to lack of objective evidence and that being sufficient to overcome Bruner, along with the administrative judge's kind of conclusory statement here that OPM has met its burden, why isn't that enough to just at least send it back for the board? I mean, yeah, for the board to consider it under understanding the proper law.
Well, the statement in Trevon is that pointing to a lack of objective medical evidence is sufficient. Here, though, I do want to point out that OPM was not pointing just to a lack of objective medical evidence. If you look in the narrative brief provided by the agency, on Appendix 193, the agency actually points to a lack of sufficient medical evidence. So it's not even pointing to objective medical evidence there. It's pointing to a lack of sufficient medical evidence.
I understand, but it takes a little bit of reading into the administrative judge's decision to reach that, doesn't it? Do you agree with that?
I agree that the standard is apparently low.
The standard for rebutting the presumption?
For rebutting the presumption based on a lack of medical evidence.
That wasn't what I asked you, though. You might agree with that. I was asking if that's what this opinion at page A16 says. I mean, this opinion at page A16 doesn't seem to be relying on a lack of medical evidence. It seems to be relying on a lack of particular types of evidence.
Well, on page A16, the administrative judge also talks about the OPM reviewer and how the medical reviewer said that there was no medical record at all found in the case file. And that seemed to me to be the thing.
And you think that's accurate?
It's true. That's what the medical reviewer said.
But is there no medical record at all found? I mean, I think you just said that actually there are even authenticated letters from the doctor. Would that be no medical record at all?
It's not clear to me whether the medical reviewer was considering those letters to be medical evidence.
I'm asking you, I'm asking you. You work in these kinds of cases all the time. Would that be considered no medical record? I have a hard time thinking that there's no medical record at all unless you're talking about of particular types of evidence, for example, objective evidence.
The letters from Dr. Greenberg can be medical records. They can have information in them that would constitute medical information. Yes.
I think there was a diagnosis, for example, in there.
Yes, that is true.
Okay, thank you.
Am I understanding correctly, our court in Trevon did not refer to and discuss Vanneken-Riles?
Trevon was decided in 1995.
I see, much earlier. I see.
Much earlier.
So Vanneken-Riles then comes back and says, well, there's
yes.
a certain kind of analysis that's not going to be sufficient.
You're correct.
Okay. Vanneken-Riles has a footnote that distinguishes Trevon, and you don't deal with that in your brief.
So,
and the argument, your adversary deals with that and says, well, that explains, basically, the footnote explains what the role of objective evidence is in one of these cases. The objective evidence isn't stated as a go, no go, rigid test. Instead, objective evidence comes into play when the record as a whole shows that there is evidence undermining the subjective evidence of the applicant, in which case the applicant can only overcome that challenge to its subjective evidence by producing objective evidence. That's the argument that your adversary is making to explain what the language really means in Trevann, because Trevann does clearly say that we agree with the board that you can meet the first step of the burden of presumption by saying that there's no objective evidence. So we have to figure out how Trevann and Vanneken Riles fit together to decide what the role of objective evidence is in one of these inquiries. Is it a litmus test, as you say, or is it instead something that gets considered in the mix? And I found it interesting that your brief simply didn't address footnote 5, 8, whichever it is, in Vanneken Riles.
So
you almost lost your opportunity to explain it.
I didn't intend it to be a distraction. But the difference that matters to this case, I think, is that Ms. Garland is arguing about rebutting the presumption. And Trevann is analogous in that it talks about rebutting the presumption.
Why doesn't OPM ever address the Brunner presumption? The OPM decisions don't deal with the question of whether or not, as in this case, whether the presumption is triggered by the removal. Is there a reason why OPM's decisions never address rebutting the Brunner presumption in a case where it exists?
I haven't found anything in the case law that addressing the Brunner presumption at the agency level. The agency may not have thought that they needed to address it there, and maybe it was for the next level of review. Because if the Brunner presumption is, as a practical matter, applied at the OPM level, who decides whether OPM has properly rebutted the presumption? Does OPM decide? And how does that look as a practical matter?
Well, is that really so mysterious? I mean, the employee or the former employee in this context has been discharged because of a kind of disability, inability to do the job. The logic is that does suggest that enough for a presumption that the now former employee is disabled for retirement purposes. So you need something to break that sort of prima facie logical implication. Why wouldn't OPM be proceeding in that fashion?
I don't have an answer to that one. I'm sorry. But OPM does certainly acknowledge Ms. Garland's departure and her removal on the basis of disability in both of the initial and reconsideration decisions. So it was not lost on OPM that was her situation. I see that my time has run out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors.
Can you tell us what we're supposed to do with Trevann? Because it's the language in Trevann that is harmful to you, isn't it?
I don't think so, though, Judge. I don't think you have to do anything with Trevann, which is our kind of the crux of our push here. I think Trevann and Vinnick and Riles coexist happily. I don't think there can be situations certainly where there's a tension or difficulty.
Well, doesn't Treban have specific language that says you can rebut the presumption by pointing out the absence of objective evidence?
But I think what's really important in...
Isn't that language in, I'm trying to find it, in Treban?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. So, but I think the really important distinction, a couple really important distinctions with Treban. In Treban, OPM presented objective evidence to rebut the applicant's subjective assertions of disability. So Treban's a wholly different circumstance than what we're looking at here. Treban is there has been a presentation of objective evidence to rebut the subjective matters. So that the context of that discussion in Treban is OPM's production. Here there's no such production.
So it's limiting the absence of objective evidence to the fact situation there.
I think that's a very important caveat to it. Yes, Judge. And I think
you're saying, just to make sure I understand, sorry, that in that case, there was objective evidence that was introduced that rebutted the subjective evidence that had been presented thus far.
That's correct, Judge. And that's the context of that discussion in Treban. And in Treban, the big takeaway from us or that we believe is in Vanek and Riles is there's this prohibition on the categorical exclusion. There's nothing in Treban, at least to our reading, that prohibits that. It's this discussion in Treban in a factual pattern, a factual framework that is wholly distinct from Ms. Garland's, and there's no support in Treban for this categorical exclusion of evidence that Vanek and Riles flags as inappropriate.
Haven't there been some board cases that then you would say misread Treban?
Yes, I would say
some
that there
board
are.
Cases that took the language that said lack of objective evidence is enough, you lose. Regardless of the fact setting, so you would argue those cases are outliers.
That's correct, Judge. There's I don't have the sites in front of me. I noticed
there
a few.
Couple, there are two or three of them.
There's a few, and I think some of them did in fact run with Treban
and
beyond.
You understand the footnote in Vanek and Riles to be supporting what you're saying about what the role, the purpose, the function of objective evidence in one of these cases.
That's correct, Judge.
And maybe the AJ's decision at Appendix 16, quoting from Angel, is that may be one of the board cases that I think, to use your language, ran with Treban?
Yes, I believe that's the case, Judge. Yes, and there's as Judge Clevenger pointed out, there's a few of those. And speaking of case sites, actually, my counsel kindly provided what I believe would be the site to the previously mentioned Gooden matter would be 471 F3rd 1275.
471 F3rd which?
1275. I see my time is concluded.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Your Honors.
Next up, both counsel, cases submitted.